You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hold on. We're in the pubes hotel room, okay? And he's in the bathroom. He's in the bathroom, and I don't know what he's doing with his
pubes.
Who
are you talking about, Sims?
Oh, the old Stu Gatz.
Oh my gosh.
He's... The old fake flush, maybe. I don't know.
I hope it was real.
Oh, what?
The old fake flush, because I think you might have had your right hand in use in there doing something else. Not sure.
After 70 quarterbacks, we have made our way to Miami, and we have the one and only Stu Gatz joining us in the famous Levitard Stu Gatz hotel room. I didn't even realize.
Yes.
I didn't even know you guys had your own room.
We do. Well, it's really Dan's room. I mean, it's not my room. It's Levitard's room. I just I occupy it every morning and take care of my business. And yeah. Leave a little gift. I left Sims a gift this morning. I usually leave him for Levitard. Yeah.
Well, on the show, you guys are talking, and Dan said he found your pubes. I found this. This is the woman that cleaned up your pubes today, Alicia.
Alicia.
So jeez. Here's the thing. Are we certain they were my pubes because your producer was here? Lefko, right. You were in this room. Sims, you've been hanging out in this room.
We know it wasn't me because I'm a different color than you guys.
Okay, so it could be Lefko. He's hairy.
Than mine.
It could definitely be your producer.
Oh, definitely. He's got hair falling off everything.
It could be, right? It could be the cleaning person.
Right? These are all still options. I can't believe I'm going here.
With Stu Gatz.
I'm down with blaming Alina. Like, I'm good with that. Is that her name?
It's a thing.
No, it's not.
It's Alicia or Alina or okay. Something. What have you learned about Sims during this entire time, man? It's been like 3 months.
The coolest thing I've learned about Sims, to be honest with you, is because you don't get this, Lefko, with a lot of former athletes, is Sims does not take himself seriously.
At all.
And I am telling you, as someone who took himself very seriously when I first got started out in this business and wanted to be like the next Mike Francesa or Chris Russo, and now turning into someone who is mocking the person I wanted to be, it's like Dan taught me this from day one. Do not take yourself so seriously and think about what we're talking about. We're talking about sports. Does Chris Sims know more about quarterback play than the average guy in his car? Yes. But the average guy in his car has a voice too, right?
Yes, definitely.
And he can rank the top 60 quarterbacks and the top 5 quarterbacks and disagree with Chris Sims. And I think that's why we all got into this business, is because of conversations we had like that, either with our dads, with our friends. In my case, it was my dad, my brother, my friends. It was people who didn't want to have the conversations. I was just boring them with sports talk. But Dan taught me not to take myself so seriously. And once I fully embraced that, because we're talking about sports and – once I fully embraced that, that's kind of where it really took off. So I was surprised, for me at least. So I was surprised to see and learn that Chris does not take himself seriously, because I think that's a big key to making it.
His height and his lack of taking things serious are what shocks most people.
Is that what shocks most people?
Well, yeah, everyone walks in, they go, hey, you're fucking taller than I thought you were.
It's funny how many people say that to me. And I guess they don't know the going rate of the starting quarterback in
the
NFL.
What did you learn about Stu Gatz?
Oh, gosh. What did I learn about Stu Gatz?
Let it fly, Sims. Let it fly. By the way, Sims does. I said this on the show today.
Yes.
just based on physical appearance, yeah. he looks like he should have had a better career in the NFL.
Definitely.
He's like a prototypical quarterback.
I know. What a fucking waste of a career I had.
Especially when we hear like the Sam Bradford numbers and like all these like guaranteed.
That kills me. I mean, it kills me. I say Sam Bradford's got $120 million in the bank.
They're like, yeah, but he throws a mean spiral. Like, Sims fucking threw a mean spiral.
Well, wait, because the rules have changed a lot on Sims since you retired. So in today's NFL, you're completely healthy. In today's NFL, what are you doing? What rank yourself in today's NFL if you're playing quarterback?
I'd like to think I'm at least in the top half of the starters, and if I could have reached my potential.
So that's top 16.
I have him at 70.
How dare you steal my thunder?
That's what Stu Gossman steals.
Potential to be very good. I didn't get a chance to prove that. Yeah. And it'll be the thing I go to the grave with that I'm always have to be like bothered with. It's going to be like my life lesson. The fact that the thing I felt like I was most gifted at, I didn't really get to show everybody that. Who gives a shit at the end of the day? I still got a lot of things to be like really happy about, but getting back to Stagatz and what I learned about him.
Yeah, let me hear that.
I mean, wow, does he say the word "wow" a lot?
Oh, that's his number one word.
Wow. I mean,
would you say your 70th best word is? If "wow"'s number one.
Wow.
wow. He gave
it. I did that. That is a good question. I don't know 70 words.
70. The word is aspect. Then, that is the 70th
or
best word.
Like the fact that he is amazing at not really listening and yet listening,
which is incredible. Because our listeners and Sims always get mad at me because I interrupt and I don't always listen.
Sure.
He might be more advanced than I am.
In the not listening game. The Colin Kaepernick mark where I said this is where Colin Kaepernick would be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? Stu Gott's follow up question was, so where would you have Colin Kaepernick ranked?
What's wrong with that? No, because you guys got to watch the show today. So you saw it on the fly. So occasionally I'll get trapped there, right? Where I'm actually not listening, like really not listening.
Right.
But it's a tough thing to kind of balance because I give off the appearance that I'm not listening. And there are times where I'm straight not listening to Dan, all right? Because I'm either not interested in what it is that he's saying or my mind has wandered off to the top five quarterbacks in the NFL. But I give the appearance, like if you're watching on TV, it looks like I'm never listening, but you guys saw it firsthand, I'm really doing.
There's a whole zoo behind you guys.
Well, I'm talking the mic in the shipping container, the entire show, essentially, advancing conversation and really trying to set up lines that are going to be funny. And it might be, you know, a line that's 5 minutes down the road, but we're setting it up constantly. The show is done by the seat of our pants.
All right, so I want to know, what would Stu Gotts have done? We are on the flight down to Miami. Yeah. We're going in. Sims and I got hooked up with some pretty good seats on the plane.
Yes.
We're walking in, and who's sitting a row in front of us? Jeb Bush.
Really?
Sims walks up to him, goes, hey, know your brother, went to school with your nieces, just want to say, you know, really appreciate you, man.
I'm kind of a big deal around here.
And the guy goes, who the fuck is going to know the president of the United States and my nieces? And he looks over and he goes, you're too young to be at Texas right now. And I'm pretty sure that Jeb spent the entire flight not knowing who he was. And he goes to Sims afterwards, he goes, so you're a talking head, huh? And Sims in his head thought that there was a show on NBC called Talking Heads.
Right.
And was like, I don't know. He goes, no, I'm saying that you talk on television.
It was my inner Stu Gotts right there. That was my inner
Stu Gotts. But I'm just curious, if you walk onto an airplane. The Stu Gotts is strong in Sims. I got to be honest with you, man.
It's insanely really strong.
It is strong.
Yes, you walk onto a plane and you see Jeb Bush. What are you doing?
Oh, wow. Probably something similar to what Chris did, although none of it would have been true. But I would have like come up with some sort of connection
point.
I
know a guy that you know.
I know a guy you know. And then was anyone sitting next to Jeb Bush?
I think his right-hand man.
Somebody was sitting next to him. He was like right there, and I was sitting two seats to his left in first class. So I just felt like I was obligated to say hello. I really wanted to say, damn, you put us in this mess right now.
Why did you say that?
Saved us.
I couldn't say that.
I would have figured out a way to kind of pony up right next to Jeb Bush for the entire flight. And then I would have worked. I don't know what angles I would have worked from there, but there's always an angle to be worked. And I would have, like, he and I would be in business by the end of the flight.
I don't think he even knew who I was post-flight.
You just
got to
come out and tell him,
Sam. I think this guy to his right looked you up.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
And then they told him.
He had, like, the little knowledge look in his eye.
Yeah, okay.
Were you insulted? Okay. Did you feel bad?
Not at all. I mean, again.
Because he would have known your dad,
I'm not that. Yeah, exactly. How's your father?
Most people ask Sims if he still plays for the Jets.
Are you still playing? No, I've been done for almost a decade now.
Do they really think that he played
for the Jets? They think
sometimes
Matt.
They're not sure. Are you the Sims that played for the Jets? Or no, I'm the one that lost the spleen. Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Oh, the spleen kid.
Is that the connection point people make with you?
I mean, it's my claim to
fame. Wait, but more so than dad, it's the spleen?
Yeah, it could be almost simultaneous. It's usually like once they figure out I'm a Sims and that I'm Phil Sims' son, then it becomes, oh, wait, are you the one that lost the spleen? And that's where it goes.
Because they all look too similar.
Right.
Like they're all blonde albinos that are 6'5".
Wait, when did you know, I just want to know, when did you know you wanted to get into this business? I mean, you were Johnny LaCrosse, right?
Yep. Yes, I was.
Okay, you grew up in Long Island.
Yep.
And You said you grew up listening to Mike and the Mad Dog and doing all that just like I did.
Mm-hmm.
So you obviously had something there about it. But what kind of took you this whole route?
It's interesting because I'll tie all those things together because my dad picked me up from lacrosse practice one afternoon and we're driving home together. We stopped at one of our favorite places, a place called Hickory's in Port Washington, to get dinner. On the way home, and I was so hungry, I'm kind of eating on the way home, okay? And we're listening to Mike and the Mad Dog. Yeah. And now this is like right when Mike and the Mad Dog came out, right? And so WFAN is the first 24-hour sports radio station, at least that I was listening to. I mean, maybe there was another one before that. I think it was the first 24-hour.
I think it's the first one ever. I don't remember another one being publicized like that.
Right, so it was out. I mean, so FAN was out for a little while before Mike and Chris were put together and started doing afternoons. So I remember driving home with my dad from that lacrosse practice. I was 16 years old, and I heard Mike and Chris. And I'm like, and I love sports, and I'm not shy. And, you know, you're kind of at that point in your life where you're thinking about college and maybe, you know, some of the things that you might be interested in doing with the rest of your life. But I heard these two guys, and Chris, they sounded like I sounded. They sounded the way I sound. They sounded like me and my friend just sitting around having a conversation.
Right.
About sports. It wasn't former athletes. It was, you know,
big-time sports fans.
Well, yeah, it was a slightly overweight gas bag on one side and a schleppy, you know, Mad Dog Russo on the other side.
Yelling his brains out, yeah.
It just clicked and it worked. And for me, it really resonated because I was kind of like Russo. Like the conversations that I would have with my dad about, you know, all-time NBA team.
Right.
I was always like the, you know, very energetic, passionate, trying to make my points. And my dad was very smart, reserved, and very even-keeled. And it felt like, you know, listening to Mike and Chris felt like me and my dad having a conversation.
Sure.
So I remember I'm eating a hot dog, and I can't get the words out because my mouth is full of pork. And I'm pointing at the radio. I'm pointing. And my dad's going, what? Swallow your food. And I said, Dad, who are these guys? And he explained to me who they were.
Right.
And I said, are they getting paid for this? And my dad said, yeah, they're probably getting paid well for this.
Yeah.
And I pointed at the radio. I said, that's what I want to do. I said, Dad, I love sports. I love talk radio.
Yeah.
And I can communicate fairly well. And I'm not shy. I said, that's what I want to do. And I knew right then and there. And so from there, I just kind of pursued it relentlessly.
And what was your first gig?
Ooh, in college, I interned very briefly at WEI. And then I interned. I moved down here because my college roommate down here in South Florida, because my college roommate was from down here.
WEI, yeah.
Yeah, very, very, very brief because I went to school in Worcester right outside of Boston. So the first real kind of gig I had was an internship at WQAM, which is a local station down in Miami. They didn't have a job for me at the time, and I moved back up to New York, and then they called me like a year later, and they said, and I'm just like, I'm starting to get my career going. Not in broadcasting. I'm doing like sales for the Knicks and the Rangers. And they called me and they like a year later and they said, hey, we got a job for you. And I said, all right, what do you got? They said, executive producer Hank Goldberg show.
Hammer and Hank.
Now, Hank knew your dad very well.
Sure.
The amount of times I had to get your dad on the phone with Hank when I was producing the show.
Dad loved Hank.
Of course. Everyone loved Hank. And Hank at the time was like Sports Illustrated. Sports radio had just really exploded. And Sports Illustrated did an article in which they ranked like the top 25, the power 25 sports talk host guys. And Hank was one of them. Hank was a big deal back then. Yeah. So I said, yeah. I go, well, what does it pay? And they're like $3.75 an hour. And but I knew, like, listen, you got to get your foot in the door.
Yes.
And this was my big opportunity. So I packed the stuff back up and moved down to South Florida. So that was my first job, the executive producer of the Hank Goldberg.
And now you have a freaking army.
Now I have an army. But thanks to Hank, he gave me the name. Hank gave me this name.
But so explain to everybody, too, because I didn't even Google this part. I didn't want to know. I wanted to actually just find out. So then you and Levitard, where do you finally sync up, meet, and go
I imagine
there?
It was at the party. They walk in, and Levitard's got like a crowd around him, and they're hanging on every word, and Stu Gatz is like fumbling on himself, and he has his own crowd. And they both at the same time made the same point, and they locked eyes.
Absolutely not.
That was it.
That was it. It was romance.
You know, the funny thing about about how Dan and I came together is I always, so producing Hank's show, Hank's entire show literally at times was just using Dan's columns for the Herald as content. Using Dan as content.
Yes. Right.
And ripping him, just never agreeing with anything Dan said. And I said, wow, if this guy in print can make Hank this mad and provide content almost on a daily basis for Hank, there's got to be something good here. Now, I didn't know Dan. But I was getting him, you know, I would get him on the show occasionally. I think he stopped coming on after a certain amount of time because Hank was just relentless.
Killing him, right.
And he was killing the Herald, too. And anyone who knows Dan, it's like, Dan's as loyal as they come. And so, like, you're killing the Herald, then you're killing Levitard.
Yeah.
And so, but the other shows had him on. And so, long story short, while I was working at WQAM, I've always had, like, entrepreneurial spirit. I always have, and I always will. But I'm thinking, you know, other markets have two sports radio stations, and we're a major market. Even though it's not the best sports town and people make fun of Miami all the time, I'm thinking there's got to be a market here for a younger, hipper sports radio station. And so I got some investors together and some people together, and we started 790 The Ticket. And I wanted to start, you know, there's no way I'm starting that station without Levitard in the afternoons. I said to myself, like, I wrote down, I still have the original piece of paper where I wrote down the original lineup. Yeah,
damn.
The way I wanted it to be. And I wanted Dan because of what we just talked about with Hank. And then I had enough people who were mutual friends who told me, hey, there's a really funny side to Dan, really cool side to Dan, a loyal side to Dan that just doesn't come out in print.
Right.
And he's articulate and he's smart and he thinks unlike any other sports columnist out there. And I'm thinking, wow, this guy would be perfect, right? Different, young, hip, sports radio. And so So Boog Shambi, who's the voice of Sunday Night Baseball and is a mutual friend, he connected us. The first time I met Dan was at a Starbucks in Pembroke Pines, which is about 30 minutes north of where we are right now. And I pitched him the idea. Dan always loved underdogs. He didn't like WQAM because they attacked him and his paper for years.
Right.
So he liked the idea of, yeah, let's take those guys down.
Take them down. Yeah.
Yeah, let's take them down. And so we talked for about an hour, and Dan said, I'm in. Let's go. Afternoon drive. And that was it. Now, he was doing it by himself because I was doing middays. And I was also the vice president and general manager of the radio
Holy
station.
Shit,
I know there's a lot of stuff going on. So probably in hindsight, not the best idea to be the GM, telling other shows what they should and shouldn't say, and then going on the radio and doing the exact opposite of what I just told them.
But that's awesome.
And that's
Stugatz. That is exactly right. Yeah. That is Stugatz.
It's very Stugatz. So so Dan calls me like a week before we launched the station. And he said, hey, I got some bad news for you. And I'm like freaking out. And I'm like, what's going on? And he said, I don't want to do the show alone.
Ooh.
And I'm very specific and picky as to who I work with. And I'm like, all right, who do you want to work with? I'll go get him right now. And he said, well, I wanted to work with Boog, but he's not available because he was working at the competing station at the time.
Right.
Non-competes. He was doing Marlins baseball, so we couldn't get him. He goes, but I trust Boog, and Boog told me to go with you.
Wow.
So he goes, you're doing afternoon drives with me, or I'm not doing it, essentially. And I said, well, I'm doing midday. And he goes, I guess you got to get yourself a new midday show.
That's
and
awesome.
So I got myself a new midday show. And then at the time, because I wanted to do my own show.
Right.
At the time, I was thinking, man, I want to do my own show. But armed with hindsight now, 15 years later, and landing at ESPN, it's the best call I ever got, right? Like, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. So,
yeah.
We did the show, and we started an afternoon drive, and it was terrible at first. And then, we both kind of figured out the right formula. And
then you add the storage container. Then you add Mike, and you add
We Guillermo. Had fans of the show. I mean, those guys are fans of the show.
That's how it started.
All the guys who work on our show at some point, at some level, were fans of our show, and big enough fans where they
because they're all from this area.
All from this area.
And they just listen to you guys.
Yes.
And we're like, I want to work with them.
100. That's it.
I mean,
literally.
They live it every day. They listen to every word coming out of your mouth.
Well, Mike Ryan was such a avid listener of our show, loved the show so
he's
much.
Genius.
He just was, he is. No, right. He's great.
Like, just listening to him talk while you guys were doing the show today, I was like, oh, this is the secret sauce
he's all
right
over.
Here.
He
he's
is.
All over.
Holy fuck.
Well, here's the most impressive. And Lefko, you and I talked about this off air a while ago. I can relate to them in a way that Sims can't relate to your producers, that Dan can't relate to our producers, because I've done their jobs. Mm. I know what they're going through. I know how difficult it is. And so, and I'm constantly, the producer in me is, and you guys saw a bit of it today, I'm producing on the fly, and we're producing on the fly. But Mike's come a long way, man. It's, I said, if anyone's ever had experience producing and Lefko, have you ever done any of this stuff?
Yeah,
okay.
For sure.
You're not just riding Sims' coattails here, getting first class, sitting next to Jeb
he's
Bush.
Just riding my coattails,
getting a little draft off the
Sims. My shoulders are tired.
But I told Mike.
Fucking-
I listen, I love the fact you guys, I'm not going to curse. You guys can, because if I curse once,
yes.
Really? Like, I'll start cursing on the show tomorrow. Yes, I'll
and
become addicted to it.
You can't stop it.
I can't stop
When's the last time you cursed?
I mean, right before we came on air.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the bathroom. You have a thing you're holding your like this.
In the bathroom.
But, can't believe I'm in the fucking bathroom.
I told Mike the single most impressive thing I've ever seen in radio happened like 3 weeks ago, where... And the producers don't get enough credit, as your producer is sitting to my left and shaking his head. Yes,
Nikki
yes,
G.
We don't get enough credit. We don't get paid enough. All that stuff been there. $3.75 an hour, okay, was my first job. $3.75. But Mike, so we were doing something, and Mike had to get Tim Kirchen on the line and get Adam Schefter on the line.
Holy moly.
All while we're on air.
Right.
And still listen to the show, because he was involved in whatever conversation.
Yeah, he's playing the music. He's doing the bumps, all that stuff.
So this is like mid-segment, and... Dan said, get Kirchen. I said, get...
Schefter.
Get Schefter. So Mike's... I have the picture on my phone somewhere. Mike is leaned back in his chair. He's got his cell phone. He's on with Kirchen. He's got the landline. The phones are kind of crossed. The landline, he's on with Schefter. Dan and I are having a conversation. Somehow we got off on Patino and Louisville and everything happening there. So Mike's having these conversations, listening to our show. Dan says a Patino line. It was vacating all the wins or something. Mike puts both phones down, leans into his microphone, puts it in my headset, not for air, in my ears, and says, that's a stake to the heart. The guy is booking two guests at once, man. Listening to our conversation and giving me the best line of the segment.
Yeah.
And that's talent, man. I mean, man. It, that is... And now people are going to sit there and go, what are you... Okay, big deal. It's not that big of it. I'm telling you, if you've never done it, it's a big deal. Because I can't, let alone... I can't have two conversations at once, let alone listening to someone else's conversation and then giving our host, my host, the best line of the segment. It's a talent, man. He's a great producer.
All right, so Sims' top five. Number one was Aaron Rodgers. Number
right.
two was Russell Wilson.
Yes.
Number three was Carson Wentz. Number four was Tom Brady. Number five was Matt Stafford. You guys have an interesting relationship with Matt Stafford.
We do.
We have always said on our show that Matt Stafford usually is number three for the NFL, but he's a top five quarterback.
Right.
I'm curious, you guys going back and forth, the disparity on Matt Stafford.
Well, I would want to hear Stu Gatz's top five. I think it's like worth hearing.
Yeah,
well, I'll give it to you. There's no disparity. I was proud. Like, I'm happy Sims went with Stafford at number five, because when he signed that contract, Dan was railing against it. And Mike and I were saying, no, he's a really good quarterback. Like, he's a franchise quarterback. So we're with
so
it. It's why I wanted Stafford at number one, because Dan's head would have exploded.
Gotcha.
Literally would have exploded.
Yes, it would have.
Like, pieces of his head all over
so
the studio.
So what did you not agree with on his list?
He doesn't agree with having Wentz above Brady. I could tell by his reaction there. And
listen, I'm a tortured Jet fan, man.
Yeah, I hear
a
you. It's debatable. I get that.
That was when we were finalizing your list.
Right.
When you were like, Lefko, I'm stuck. Let's just put it out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, go ahead.
You were like, I'm stuck. Is
oh,
it Brady
you're peeling
or
back
Wentz?
The curtain right
yeah.
now?
Yeah.
This is great.
Well, because we were sitting there on Friday, and he's like, man, I don't know. Is it Wentz three or Brady three? And back and forth.
Like, I had Wentz three from the start.
Right.
But I made the list before Wentz got hurt. That's what. So it,
okay.
At that point.
Yeah, the list started December 4th.
Yeah, was that when it was?
Yes.
Right. So it was the week before he got hurt.
But then
maybe.
I just said, this is how it goes with Sims. He starts thinking about how people are going to react. I say, no. Who do you fucking believe is number three? And he's like, it's Carson Wentz. But that's the big difference.
Well, yeah, but it got the reaction that I think.
Holy crap. I know.
Right, it worked out for everyone,
Dan's
right?
Dan's eyes, like, glazed over to a point where I couldn't sense his emotion. Like, usually I could tell, right. like, how he feels. That one, he went, I just don't even know.
I know.
Well, I mean, but... You're basing it just on this past season. Yes,
exactly.
Dan was genuine. Like, Dan was enraged
right.
at Sims.
Right.
I think I'm kind of, if you're just going to base it on last season, I think I'm kind of okay with that.
Thanks, Ooh. Man. Thanks.
You know?
I mean, we're Stu Gatz.
You got the Stu Gatz stamp of approval.
Oh, well, I mean, we have a lot of similarities.
Can you dispute that he was the best quarterback in the NFL until he got hurt? He may have been number one.
Yeah.
Seriously.
He's no doubt.
Right.
He's in that question. I mean,
here's what I've learned. I've learned to trust Sims, though. I have. Like, the great thing about Sims, he doesn't take himself seriously, but... We realized this early on.
Yeah.
Like, Sims is good at this. Like, really, really good at
when
this.
Cody
and Dan
challenged
because I was thinking, how are we going to get through 69 more days?
Yeah.
This is insane. But then he didn't take himself seriously, and his analysis was spot on.
I think when
right?
Cody challenged him, when he had Eli at 38, and there were actual like statistics and stuff to back it up. But what you just said is something that I've been marveling at for the last fucking 4 years. He has gems. His analysis is unbiased and it's completely truthful. But the problem is they go, oh, well, your dad played in the NFL and you didn't last for that long. And I can't trust someone that didn't win a Super Bowl.
Right.
Like, that's our weird fucking media landscape. Yes. Is, unless you won a Super Bowl or like
you're not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Like, I can't listen to you. And I've just been like, look, we're going to sit over here getting smarter because I get to talk to this dude every day.
Right.
But people can't, they just can't wrap their brains around it.
I know. I'm that guy, though, by the way. Like, I'm kind of that guy. Like, no rings, and you haven't really done anything. But Wentz hasn't had that much time to do it.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, does he get a ring? Does Wentz have a ring this year?
Yes.
Like,
he gets a ring.
Because I have a personal record
book.
Does he
get a ring in your personal record book?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's a good question. I'm actually thinking about it right now. He did get the team to...
Yeah.
I mean, he essentially got
he
them.
He locked up he for was, he home was, field advantage.
They were, yes. I mean, that Rams game where he got hurt, but... Yeah, it's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, by him
and now does Foles get a ring? Because if Foles can win with that team, then anyone can win with that team. Now I'm confused. Now I don't think Foles gets a ring, and maybe Wentz doesn't get a ring either.
That's the point.
Trey
of the whole
Burton's the only one that gets a ring.
The whole conversation. That's the point of it. We've put quarterbacks into this. Oh, if you don't have Tom Brady or the guy,
right,
then your team can't win. Yet there's 51 other guys on the team.
I love what you said. You said this a couple of times as we went down this list, but you said it today specifically that all these guys, Stafford, all the guys who haven't won, they are Super Bowl winning quarterbacks. They just haven't had the right team,
around. Yeah. Team around him.
Like, if Stafford plays with the Patriots, how many does he have the same amount of Super Bowls?
I think so. Yes,
really.
I do.
Cam Newton, same deal.
Yeah. Listen, I say this. I look at New England's Super Bowl run, and I'll just say this real quick. This is a really distracting seat because I keep seeing girls walking to the beach.
Right.
We
might want to tell the people we're in a hotel room in the Cleveland. Their spring break is going on.
It is.
I have my back to the action. Sims is looking
on the third floor, so
at
we
a
have
pool
some
full of beautiful women.
The pool, and then the pathway to the
and they're
beach.
Naked. All of them.
Oh my god!
And there's Levitard naked out there as well. My god.
Oh my gosh!
And the waitress's outfits when we walked in.
What?
It was crazy.
They were wearing thongs at 9:30 this morning.
My only thing is, we walked in and we're in the Clevelander, and the TVs are on. I'm like, I'm going to see Stu Gatz's face everywhere. You're not on a single fucking screen.
No.
How do they do that?
It's First Take and it's Sports Center.
Yeah, well, ESPN. You. That's. I don't know why they do that, man. It's like
Come on.
It's not even on in our little studio there.
No.
We don't even have it on there because
we're going to keep you humble.
We have First Take on. I can't watch myself on TV anyway. It's hard to.
Yeah, can you listen to yourself? You do it. You don't want to, right? I don't like to listen to myself.
So so it's funny because I already see your producer because he knows me well enough to know that he's calling BS on me. Because you're right. Actually, you know what? You're right. I just lied to both of you. I do watch myself often.
How
I
fucking dare you?
I fast forward through all the Levitard parts and just stop when I start talking.
This guy's
talking.
Good. This guy's great.
He's a good-looking guy, and he's got great points. But no, it is hard. Like, do you guys, I find it, I watch occasionally, and Dan knows this. I always say, things that we do that felt great, that felt funny, aren't nearly as funny as we thought they were.
Yep.
And things that we do that were really bad, usually, if you go
funny.
Back and watch them back, they weren't nearly as bad as you thought they were. And then I also watched to see how we could have done some stuff a little bit better. I know Mike does the same thing. But those are the real reasons I'm kind of watching it back.
The ones that you think that nailed, you never get that perfect camera shot that you saw in your eye. You
correct.
Know what I mean? Like, you're like, oh, Dan's reaction there was great. And then you rewatch it. It's on Guillermo. And you're like, God, that was the shit.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's like the medium ones. But I thought the way the show ended today with the confetti and all that.
Oh, it was great.
It did.
It was a celebration of Sims, man.
I'm a little sad.
I'm sad, too. I really am. I mean, I was honored. Forget coming on the show and like being with these guys. The fact that there was like a ticker tape on the bottom
that
of my top
Oracle.
70.
Yes.
That said the Oracle.
Yes.
Yes. That was, man.
Well, what do we do now? Like,
I wanted to ask. I wanted to get Dan up here because Dan, we're waiting on Levitard.
Yeah, he's coming.
Fucking always, big time Levitard.
We're always waiting on Levitard.
Yeah. Man. I mean,
I'll say this. I think that a lot of intelligent
amazing.
People that I've met, they're not really good at eye contact. And when they process things, like your eyes kind of go all over the place because you're thinking. You and Dan both have those eyes. Like, Dan is up there and he's like, okay, we're going to cut that one. Did you get that take? All right, good. And then while you're talking, you're like kind of all looking around, just like high functioning humans.
Do you hang with him off? Like, I have to be careful how much I want to hang out with Lefko.
Why?
Because it's a work-wife situation.
It's a work-wife situation. I want it to be natural on camera or on the mic, whatever it may be. Like, I don't want to exercise all our conversation. This guy, if you get him in a room,
I mean,
you saw before the podcast.
Yes.
He wanted to do the podcast, and we hadn't turned on the fucking mic yet.
And you were telling him to save it for
save
the podcast.
The well,
because in my mind,
right.
It's so perfect.
God, right. Damn you.
So all the good stuff happened before the podcast.
Exactly, yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're late, everybody.
I don't know. Dan and I...
backwash.
Listen, Dan, so we're polar opposites, man. Like, we really are. He lives three blocks from here. I live three counties from here.
Dan lives right in this area.
He lives three blocks.
Yes.
No, three blocks.
His situation is phenomenal. He's created a world in his house.
Three blocks. If you're hearing resentment in my voice, it's because there's resentment in my voice. Three blocks. I'm driving an hour and a half to get here every day. The funny thing about that is I knew we were coming down here.
Tell him.
Chris heard this today. Dan and I were talking about during a break. I knew we were moving down here for like a good year. Rather than move closer to the studios, I move further away from the studios. So Dan said, I don't want to hear any resentment. Like, nothing. Don't complain about the drive. And yet I come in every morning complaining about the drive.
Oh, fucking traffic down here is bad.
It's brutal. It's brutal. But we don't spend that much time together, in large part because I have kids and I'm married. And he's, I should say he's single. He's got a girlfriend, but he's living three blocks away. And he's living on South Beach. And he's got an amazing pad. And he doesn't have kids to worry about. So
here's what's funny is, I'm the Stugatz now. But I'm realizing in their dynamic, I'm the Lebatard.
Definitely.
I'm the one that's 100%. In Manhattan living three blocks away with a girlfriend, and you're the one living in Connecticut this whole time.
Right.
Damn.
And me and Stugatz.
You're the Stugatz.
We're just keeping it real over here. Yep. Me and Stugatz. That's what we do.
Yep.
I was really eyeing up your chair today. And I think when I take your spot, it's going to be a little bit more comfortable. I'm going to get a bigger one.
Right.
I just think that...
I'll ride it out with Sims, dude. I'm good with that.
What would happen? Lebatard comes into work on Monday.
He'd kick
just
you out,
in
Lefko.
The seat. Yeah, he'd like, get the fuck out of
here. Lefko.
He would up, kick Lefko. You out.
Like, I only work with people I trust.
What were they calling you today? The band director? The marching band?
I was Millie rocking, and then Dan thought that I was marching.
You know what the other thing he does? Do they dress you ever?
No, not really.
Yeah, because this is a
I just steal clothes from our.
I got it
right here.
Good. I got into radio, so I didn't have to wear a suit. I'm dead serious. Uh-huh. That's why. I mean, it's one of the main reasons I got in the radio. I promised myself I want to get a job in which I never have to dress up for. Like, I don't want to wear a suit.
I agree.
I'm uncomfortable. I don't like ties, and so. And this is overdressed for me today. I dressed up for Sims.
Oh, thank you.
I actually wore pants today. Yes,
I did that whole news reporter suit and tie.
It's the worst.
It's fucking awful.
Let's stop here and wait for Lebatard.
You want to do that?
Yeah. And right. Let's keep it fresh. I mean, how long can he talk? He's talked for 4 hours.
I could literally go for four, but yeah, I got you.
I wanted to ask him first about this. You know what he does there? I mean, it's like the tongue wag of Michael Jordan, except it's Dan Lebatard, 1 year hangout. You know,
it's not that at all. It's that I'm old and Stugatz's headsets are so loud because for the last 15 years, he's had them over his ears.
Right.
And I don't put them on my ears because I saw him losing his hearing from the very beginning.
This is an incredible universe that you have here. Like, in the world of media, to have the TV show and the radio show and the pool party, like, I've never seen anything like this in my life.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. I'm not kidding you. When I walk in every day, I want to crawl in with gratitude because I don't even understand this. As someone who's always wanted to represent Miami and sort of never wanted to leave Miami, didn't have any interest in any of the stuff that came with the national stuff. I just wanted to be a Miami dude. And so when they come to me, ESPN was trying to get me, hey, how do we get this done so that you come work for us? And I'm like, I don't want to work for ESPN. I'm Miami. I want to do Miami. That's good enough for me. And they're like, but what if we created something for you that was more Miami than what you already got, which is, you know, local columnist, afternoon drive time. And then they're like, you could work with your dad. Your brother will do the art on the show. It'll be a pool party. We'll put it at a bar even though we're Disney, you know.
Yeah.
Woo! And so you're like, yeah, that's more Miami than what
did
I had.
Did you just sit there and go, they're going to put my dad on TV? Like, this is... Like, I don't know how you pitched that. When did that even...
Well, no, it's not... That's not... Look, man, good God, have we had a lot of help. And I'd love to take credit as if there was some master plan. But really, the answer to your question is simply... ESPN needed a Hispanic show, and I don't look or sound Hispanic enough. And so we were going, it's as gratuitous as that. Yeah. It's not any great stroke of marketing genius or even, like, the starting point was that, is that how do we put the Hispanic accent on ESPN?
Do you feel weird right now?
Yeah. Feel weird?
Yeah, because you're not running the show.
Right? I mean, yeah. I feel weird because I don't
mean that in a respectful way.
No, I feel yes. No, that's not the part that I feel weird about. It's the part that I feel weird about is these kinds of questions are not questions that are ever asked of me in interviews. That's not like because you guys are like legitimate fans of understanding the stuff that we're doing. And so when people call me to do these kinds of things, it's usually to talk about, you know, what did you think of the Eagles winning the Super Bowl? Right. And so I'm just sort of the discomfort that you see off me is only and exclusively because I'm like, wow, this looks like arriving when people are coming to interview you and wait to interview you to talk about this thing that they love and feel honored to talk about it. When I just look at it as, good God, what a stupid fucking thing we do laughing every day.
You're so good at it. And I'm going to use, all right, he's bigger than I thought.
Taller.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I did the full scouting report on him when he ran his little like 40-yard dash out here a few weeks on TV. But I mean, high calf muscle.
Very high calf.
Has legs like an athlete.
Fitter than you thought.
Definitely.
I mean, not like sloppy.
No. Square shoulders, big guy.
Don't tell anybody.
So this is where I want to go next with it.
No, don't ruin the fat jokes.
I'm not going to ruin that. Anything else.
It makes him relatable.
But I'm like Mr.
It makes me human instead of just a strident gas bag.
I think I'm a professional at looking at naked men, Dan Le Batard. I can scout them out and tell you ass, legs, what they look like.
I'm not saying it looks good. I'm just saying it doesn't look as bad as people might think. Like, if I walk past you in the spa, you'd be like, no, was that Dan Le Batard? It can't be.
They might have to Google you. They're so impressed.
But then I want to know, this would be my next scouting question, okay? Because I got to meet Poppy today, of course, and he's got good size. But what does mom look like? Can I ask that? Like, she must have a little size to her.
She used to. She used to have size to her, but she has shrunk. Like, she's lost three years in aging.
3 inches in aging?
3 inches, excuse me. Yes, not 3 years. And so, no, I'm sorry, I got distracted.
You lost 3 years, too.
I mean, think about what you just did to me. You asked me a question that went and summoned my, like, greatest fears about my mom's mortality, and I turned 3 inches into 3 years. So, I was just sort of...
So she was bigger, though.
He's going to ask you that question.
She was
again.
three inches taller.
Yeah. Okay.
So Stugatz was explaining to us what was so shocking about Sims, but I'm curious from your perspective, you get this guy on. He's a typical gas bag, talking head, former quarterback, dad played, had a whatever career. He's saying this abstract thing about Bortles. You have mom. When did it click for you that Sims is a little bit different than I thought he was going to be?
Well, I think he'll find this part flattering because I find his father in some ways, and I mean this as no disrespect as someone who loves fathers, to be starched and stiff and sort of give off self-importance. And so I didn't know what would fall from that tree, but I didn't expect its analysis to be very far from the way his father analyzes games or like sports, while also having all of the analytic elements that you must to have that kind of expertise. So like I was blown away pretty early that he was able to make fun of himself. It didn't take a whole lot more than that he didn't seem to be taking himself very seriously.
I think what's funny about Sims for me with that whole thing is we know that Phil is actually a lot more like Chris than what everyone's seen. Like, we have him on the
secretly.
Show.
Secretly. No, secretly.
Yeah, secretly.
And we have been trying to pull it out of him
for
years.
But you guys will understand this, though. You guys will totally understand this. Like, throughout my career, I've always been frustrated by the Phil Simses of the world who had to conceal their personalities in the name of the job when I would have wanted to see the secret side or the side that was jocular, relatable, human in the locker room, but they turn them into robots.
Yeah. Right. No, they we talk do. About the time. We just say that we are are showing our bias as being unbiased. Well, and a lot of people can't comprehend that.
Cool. What makes them robots? So this is totally just off the top of my head right now. Like,
you tell us.
Well, I think what makes my dad a robot is he's had everybody. He's got an ego to a fact where I'm Phil Sims. I'm Super Bowl winning quarterback, and
that's
everybody
voice,
tells him how great he is and everything like that. And you get used to people wanting to like you and things like that. We had this kind of conversation with Tom Brady a little bit the other day,
right? But the pressure.
I don't know
of
what
fame.
It is. I don't even know what I'm talking
and
about.
That's
right
why
now,
I think
saying,
he ended up like this.
Oh, okay.
Because I think he watched all those people talk shit behind his dad's back and then shake, and he went, well, none of that matters. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think he ended up just being like, I'm just going to tell it like it is 100%.
Well, and it's so weird to me. It really is weird to me, as it has been for throughout every step of my career, that in this department would somehow be unique. It's crazy to me.
Right.
How is that fucking possible?
I was talking to someone, his cousin, last night, and I said, the thing that I like about how your brain works is that I feel like you've been in so many roles of media, and you've witnessed, there's only a limited amount of stories that can be told in sports. The unlikely hero, the deafening defeat, all that stuff. I feel like you've seen all of it, you've seen it presented a few ways, and you've just reached the point where you go, why are we asking that question? Mm-hmm. Why are we telling that story? You're now 30,000 feet, mm-hmm. and I not enough people are at that level, which is weird.
You guys, I can't tell you how weird this conversation is. I can't tell you how weird this conversation is for me, because I've not spoken in these terms about our show in any way to anybody. I don't think I can articulate or understand or take credit for the amount of stickiness our show has on you, where you care about the things that you're asking me about. I mean, it's hugely flattering, man.
Yeah.
But we saw you in action today, so you could sit here and be like Johnny Humblepie fuck you want.
Swear,
but
man,
I just saw you. I know what you did today. EP, I mean, you did it. You produced Highly Questionable, and you're sitting there doing the radio show, and you're talking to me on how to close out the show.
And then you're getting makeup in between the radio show. Like,
you're dealing with your vaginal bleeding on your left hand, all those things are issues.
I just.
What happened to the hand? I don't even know the story.
I had surgery.
Little Tom Brady.
No, I was doing back bends in the. I was doing back bends in a hotel lobby. Yes, I was doing back bends in a hotel lobby. And
yes.
The column. No, I'm not making this up.
No, I know. I heard.
I was grabbing the column and I sort of slipped. And then my hand hit the floor. Then there was a lesion on it. And evidently, you know, I was trying to pop it because it started to inflate vagina, my vaginal wound.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes.
You got to be careful with some of that language. You got to be.
They tell him all the time.
At the risk of being the joy police, the joke police. But I have this lump on my palm, and they say that it's a very sensitive area, that you can't have just any kind of surgery, and they had to take it out. So it's not an interesting story, but that's why I had the first surgery. I'm sorry. Boring.
So anticlimactic.
Yeah, it really was. It was. I wish I had a big punch. You know, a big punchline. I could fix it for you if you guys want. I slapped my producer today when he made a mistake with my left hand and it sliced my hand open.
I was trying to figure out what emotion you had when he put Tom Brady at four, and I was like reading your face, and I couldn't figure it out. What was that?
Well, no. At that point, like, we'd made just an absurdity of the whole thing, that I was just along for the ride because I didn't want to play the straight man.
You realize that at four? You didn't see that?
Yeah, like, no. I didn't want to play the straight man anymore. I mean, we've been in and out of it, but not like that. Like you guys did today. So I was like, okay, we'll go along for the ride now, so I don't have to be the guy always tethering the show with the non-fun.
Yeah.
the no fun league. All right, we're not going to keep you here forever. We know you got other shit to do. The thing, I want to know, like, little things, because, like, I'm trying to grow my relationship, our brand, the Sims and Lefko.
Oh, yeah.
How do you balance your off-mic relationship with Stu Gatz? Texting, calling, hanging out,
too much.
He's my work wife, and he likes to talk before the podcast starts and do the whole podcast before then. So how do you balance that?
Wow, that's interesting. You guys care in an unusual way. Stu Gatz and I did all that work on the front end, probably when we were about your age or not that far after, right? When we were first starting, that's where the work was in building the friendship. Whatever the friendship would be was going to be what the work was going to be. And so we were building that through chemistry, through loving each other, through life experiences. And so at this point, we've got our own lives.
Yes.
But along the path, what happened is that we became friends. And so the communication wasn't with partners or comedy teams or any of that stuff. It was just like everything that you see around us is a bunch of friends working together. It was very important to me always. They still make fun of me about this at PTI, 15 years in my voice. I just want to work with my friends. that's what we're doing in every aspect now.
How do you do, this is the last thing I'm going to ask, so you can get out of here.
That means he's got three more.
No, well, it's going to be a long one.
I am in no hurry.
Okay,
like, I don't know
what you're doing.
I don't know.
It's on demand.
I feel bad, but either way.
Please don't.
Okay, fine. The other thing is, I'm fascinated by, okay, when I listen to you, not that I always agree with every opinion you've ever had in the history of your show. But the one thing I always tell people, especially about you, is the fact that your opinions are always very well thought out and fact-based. My big thing is just, how do you follow everything? How do you follow sports? I'd love to know a little bit, just without telling us maybe anything you don't want to, your inner workings of when you leave here for the day, how do you keep up with sports and how do you do that?
I think you guys, and thank you for this, it's flattering, but I think you guys are giving me too much credit as if there was some sort of thing. And I swear this is not false modesty. Yeah. We have a lot of help. I mean, you see, we've got the fattest radio show in America. Nothing like this exists anywhere. We've got a lot of people producing, know their roles, who get me the information to make me look on occasion like I'm more informed than I am. But I am not leaving here and researching, and there's not a design to what it is that we're doing here other than my friends, our friendships, we're all working to buoy each other. Yes. And you guys were in the middle of it today and you saw how it works, because it's not and very few people understand this, and fewer would articulate it. You guys sat today as people who get what we're doing, why we're doing it, the spoof, the caricature, and find the rebellion and the inspiration in it. You guys sat in the middle of the music and you guys got to see how each of those people played their instruments, all of them, to make me and Stugatz look better than we actually are.
I almost think it's better when you don't know. I think it's better when you're out there and I get the Levitard, wait, what? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, what just happened? Mm-hmm. Like, I heard them say a few days ago that are you on social media at all? Are you?
No, I haven't been. Like, so his question, I'm paying next to no attention.
It makes the show better that you're not paying attention, because it's genuine curiosity. You're not feigning it. You're not going, I watched that game. Wait, what happened last night? Wow.
So no, I am watching nothing right now. And my life has been a lot freer and happier for the last 3 months, because every time I come in here, I'm not strangling it with whatever my thoughts are on content. Everyone else gets to do their job. And I swear to you guys, it is not false modesty. What you're witnessing now, after many, many, many years, is a whole lot of people buoying me and what we do. It's not me as an orchestra leader. It's me as a grandpa, just sort of watching everybody work after 15 years of creating this fruit.
When did you do that removal of social media? Was there an impetus to that?
That's a big word.
There was we'll an impetus to that.
That's Stugatz's 70th best word, actually.
I just tried to clear my head. I was tired all the time, and when the new year came, I'm just like, I want out for a while.
Oh, it was a resolution.
So I want out for a while, and then I found myself less tired. And my guess is, if you chronicle it, as the most zealous people around our show would, you'd find an appreciable difference between what our show became on January whenever we came back and what it's been since right there. Like, anybody who's been listening to us for a long time has seen that what you guys were in the middle of today is a new evolution of everyone playing the music better. Like, our show has been better over the last 6 months than it's ever been.
What is next for...
No problem, Dan.
I want to ask you this question.
Glad I made the ratings better.
What do you see as the future for Mike? Because I think he is, like, a genius, and I'm just watching him pull the strings back there, and I'm going... I mean, maybe this is... Because what you guys have right now, it's never going to be duplicated, and I hope you guys have the longest run possible. Mm-hmm. But there, he's got the juice, man.
Yeah, and now he's empowered to go use it, because we finally have support and popularity that you need. Like, now he will have real and legitimate power. We will fight for it. We'll get it in negotiations so that he can become an executive who affects content at ESPN. That's the whole idea. When we were hired at ESPN, the idea of it was, because I never wanted to work there, is I remember this so clearly. It's so funny. Before we went to ESPN, we were making fun on local radio, just having fun, goofing off, probably doing what you guys are doing a lot, and it just feels so good because it's the beginning stages and you're learning something. And it was just a crazy time, inspirationally, where you're just having fun and figuring out how to grow things. And I didn't want to go work for ESPN. I did not want to do it. And Stugatz and Mike Ryan wanted to do it. And so what we have now is they pushed me along the path to get us where we are now, which is a successful brand. Because back then somebody said, when we said, maybe I'll go to ESPN, and we can change the culture there a little bit. Right. Shake the cages, just see if we can do that. And a text came in, and I will never forget it, really. Change the culture there, Levitard, really. Keith Olbermann works there, and compared to you, he's Henry David Thoreau.
Man.
Who's, can you tell us who sent that text?
No, it was just a text. It was just, oh, I love the insults
right,
of the...
Right,
oh,
but,
the texter,
but,
gotcha.
But, right, but it, but... But how great is it that we've actually been able to do it, and now that it's successful and they see, look, we outsourced this fun and whoa, it's sticky with young people. Now Mike, now Michael gets some real power to do things, hopefully.
Right. Well, I think that's sort of been like the underlying current of ESPN is that when they outsource the fun, that's when amazing shit happens.
It's weird to me, and it'll forever be weird to me.
Like, not even ESPN. Like, can you go to like a global scale? When you have a company and they're like, we want to create something unique and they put something to it, they almost kind of strangle it. But when they allow creativity to exist in its own vacuum and they support it from afar, like that's kind of why I think what's happening at Bleacher Report. That's why he's smiling right now, because we've been building for a few years now. Bleacher Report's like, we're excited to get behind you. And I love them for that. But there is that weird relationship. And I'm sure it's like parenting, too. You can't helicopter. You got to let it be. And then it becomes its own thing. But...
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You just like that, how he's doing that?
No,
that's why I have a smile, because he's answering his own questions and saying it. And, yes, he's telling you, Dan.
I just want the Levitard's nod of approval, and I got it. So
you got it.
Back off. I would really appreciate it. It was a moment. It felt good, and you're stepping off.
Tell me how the fuck you ever got with Stugatz, okay? Where is it? Because Stugatz kind of told us the story a little bit, but I want to know... You basically set up, I'm not going to do the show unless you do it with me, and he was going to have to get off his own show. What did you see in him go?
Oh, this Stugatz was, Stugatz invented the whole thing, right? Like, Stugatz introduced us to this. I was, at the time, the local radio station was doing what they probably were to your dad during those times on the New York radio stations. They were just crushing me and the Miami Herald all the time. Everything I wrote.
Can you believe he wrote this?
Everything I wrote. Yeah, what, and just, we were the kind content for them every day.
Right.
And so Stugatz appears one day and says, hey, Dan, how'd you like to be your own content?
Yeah.
Like how, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. We could go fight. We can go fight instead of just me doing their work for them. And then they go in and you. They do the radio show, lazily take calls. What do you think about what Levitard wrote?
Right.
What a jackass and an asshole. And so,
and
yeah.
They were true, but go ahead.
Yeah, right. Yes. That's correct. And then we started growing, fun, and they called it Sissy Boy Radio, and at every turn they said what we do is silly and awful and sophomoric, and yeah, and Stugatz along that path, right, as we were learning what we were doing, and I was sort of forcing my sensibilities on him, that character became real and we became friends. He is someone who is far more of an ape when I met him than even what you see now. Like, and I think he'd tell you that himself. Like, his opinions were received. I was receiving his opinions for the first time, and they were laughably bad opinions. Like, they were strident, you know, Mike Lupik on Sports Reporter's opinion given, but there was nothing in him. Like, it was just garbage, and he knows it.
Yeah.
And so he just started to learn more and more about himself, who he really is. And wait a minute, I don't have to do this on television the way everyone else does, taking myself this seriously.
Yeah.
There's a path over here is the court jester, of course, and the least taken path seems to guarantee me more money, so I'll go down that path instead of being just another one of the gas bags on ESPN doing what all the others are.
I have walked around New York many times. I've been in Miami, and I see the artwork, and I see Lebo, and I am embarrassed to say that last night was the first time I realized that that was your brother. Like,
are you sure, though? I think you might have that wrong. That might, is that not Keith Haring? Like, I don't know. I'm not an arts guy. I don't know. I don't think my brother has a lot of art in New York.
No,
I know.
Well, I feel like I've just consumed art and then seen the LEBO, and I'm, you know, like you see it, and then I don't even remember where it was, but that you are so tuned into the culture. How much did he impact, and what he's doing impact, not only your love for Miami, but just that whole creativity?
I mean, my brother and I,
how old is the brother?
My brother's 45.
Okay.
And he is an enormous creative force, and he is vastly more artistic and more open-minded than I am, and freer, just generally emotionally in every way freer. And so along our paths, you know, I remember when I'd be writing all night an article, 12 hours, he'd spend that time on his bed drawing his left hand the entire time, all night, to craft this thing. And so I would say you'll see his influence on everything I do, in everything I do. And he also keeps me young in ways I can't be, because I don't even understand why you guys are here, man. I'm 49 years old.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand when I go by that pool party why people would want to take pictures with me. I swear to you, this isn't false modesty. I don't get it. I shouldn't be young. So the only thing keeping me young would be my younger brother in this environment of freedom, artistic freedom.
Man, this is just such a great place to work. Gosh.
I was totally distracted before it was Stugatz. I mean, it was just one girl walking by.
It used to be. No, you guys, if you guys had caught us in the glory days of this particular nonsense from 3 to 7, you would see women dancing on stilts and body painting up here. And like this right here is much tamer.
The glory hole days, huh?
Why'd you go there?
The glory hole days.
Unnecessary. That's 13th Street. I know that because people have told me.
Oh, sure. That's why. What? I didn't even know that. The glory hole days.
What are you
like
talking
my favorite
about? Why
clip
did you insert
the
glory holes in the middle of what we're talking
because
about?
Because of my man Jerry Jones. You saw that clip last week.
What is the matter with you? Hold on a second.
You haven't seen the Jerry Jones glory hole clip? What? You guys got to look this up. I'm just telling you, I'm the first one ever. I mean, this is the first time ever I'm like letting you know social media shit, okay? He is giving a speech about how he wants the glory days to come back, but he must have just got done watching Pornhub. And he goes, I want me some glory hole.
I believe that is not a song. You're totally making that up.
It's not a song, he said.
No, that is not true. That can't be true.
I'm going to look it up. Okay?
It can't be true. So how is that possibly true?
Accurate.
Yes, hold on 1 second.
Are you positive?
I'm 100%.
Jerry Jones is out here making glory hole jokes.
Yes, it happened like in training camp last year.
You're saying it's happened twice now?
No, here we go. It's pulled up. It's coming.
Are you the first? Why are you not carving a niche in which you do investigative reporting on this story as your next career?
He's too focused on global warming and traffic issues in New York.
And America's a racist country.
That's his favorite part about your show, is the Popovich clip.
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yes.
The Popovich.
The 5 second.
Well, I love Popovich,
but the favorite part of your show is that Greg Popovich says that America's racist at the end of our show.
We usually go on about 12 minute rants about the issues facing
our. What is the matter with you guys?
A lot.
Is the matter?
I don't know where to start.
We don't know how they let us do this.
I don't care about our show the way you guys care about our show.
Well, you've pulled me in. I hold on. I got to reconnect to the damn network here,
dude. You're gonna
you missed glory hole. Okay, the glory hole.
That's
days.
All right. You can just in the future you could text me whatever it is that this story was that would prove you right about glory holes. Yeah. It's very important.
You're really locked.
It's
up.
Very important that you be right on this.
Gosh. All right, I'm gonna ask one more serious question, then I'm gonna be done with serious questions. When you unmask something, there becomes like a new truth, right? And I feel like he does. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones wants some glory hole. Let's play. Right.
Just there go play. They need to hear it. This is great.
That's a good producer right there. That's somebody getting done. That's a corporate computer. He just typed up glory hole. I hope Bleacher Report has good lawyers.
But, yeah. We'll be all right. I've said worse.
I don't think there's a plug in here. Oh. All right, we're going to go back to the beginning.
Please do.
This is live.
Come on. We can't keep Dan forever here, okay?
This is live?
Yeah, you're being broadcast right now. Over. No, I'm just kidding. All right, so Sim says that Jerry Jones mentioned glory hole. Nikki G has gone and found that audio.
It's part of leadership is to have some of the guys that have gone before that have been disappointed to share it with everybody involved. For me, it's a reminder. I, too, have been here 23 years.
Watch this. This is
and it is a reminder. I've been here when it was glory hole days, and I've been here when it wasn't. And so having said that...
It gets better. Keep listening.
I want me some glory hole.
Wait. It gets better. Hold on.
So I have that perspective.
They try to fix it for him. Watch. Rich Darlimple, the head of their...
Oh, no. It's over. That clip
is over. If you watch the extended clip, the head of the media for the Dallas Cowboys comes out and goes, he tries to make an excuse and says, just so you all know out there, glory hole is a phrase that's very common in the oil drilling business. And Jerry goes, well, that'd be the first time I've heard of it.
That's good
right there. All right.
No, that was good.
That felt spontaneous.
No, that is good. That's good. What are you doing? That's funny.
Yeah.
Anytime you could just lob glory hole content in people, follow that.
Follow it
into the sun.
That and being in the Pubes hotel room, it's phenomenal. Yes. It's awesome.
My serious last question was just the unmasking. When you reveal that second truth, that everything that everyone at your company has done is a little bit of a caricature and they don't realize it, do you feel like it's all going to shift? Like, can your show actually become the new normal?
Oh, no, we'll probably get left behind there unless the young people keep us young. Like, that's how we'll become old. We'll become old because we'll get passed by all the other people who have brighter minds and now have a path that has been blazed so they can do it that way. I think the content at ESPN is going to change a lot in the next 10 years.
It has to, I would think.
I think the content everywhere is going to go through like a crazy metamorphosis.
Yeah, like, and this is going to be like such, it's going to seem like such an antiquated model the way that we were doing it. Yeah, that happened fast in real time because I do not believe, when you think about what's happened at ESPN with the content, like the amount of money ESPN was making over these last few years, like you could have been making Game of Thrones.
Yeah, right.
Whatever Game of Thrones, imagine Game of Thrones of sports.
Right.
Like what would that be?
Game of Zones on Bleacher Report.
But what would it be? Yeah. Imagine if sports had some sort of epic thing that represented the best in sports entertainment television ever. Like what is that? What represents the greatest piece of sports art we've ever known, and why aren't the content companies making that? Because they were making an awful lot of money.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they like counting the checks.
Good God, guys. Like, you know, hiring sports writers to gas bag on television is not the highest end of the economic content model. No. And, like, the reason we got into sports radio is because of how low that bar was. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, really? Okay, this is the lowest bar of entertainment. It's going to be a host taking callers. And the callers are going to do the show in their cars driving around because they think this thing about the Eagles. Right. Can we jump over that in terms of entertainment? That's how low the bar is.
Did it beat writing? Like when you started doing it at first, did you think, I made a mistake here, I should go back to the damn column?
No, you know what? What, writing is so lonely, guys. Like, you guys are on the same path. You guys are on the same kind of path that we were on a long time ago. Writing is lonely, and I needed to do something that wasn't lonely, because while it was the most fulfilling thing I was doing for 10 years, I was unhappy because I wasn't sharing it with anybody.
Right.
So I go to PTI, and we start doing PTI on television, and it wasn't doing PTI on television that was fun. What was fun is being in the newsroom before we did PTI and everybody just fucking around.
Right.
And so I said to myself in there with the producers of what is now our television show, like friends of 15 years, I said in there, how do we create that?
Right.
How do we create that? And so we did.
You did it.
Like, we did it with Stu Gatz, and we did it with Mike Ryan, and we did it with Billy, and with Allison, with everybody. So it's just, it's been crazy to watch.
Thank you for taking care of Sims.
I'm going to miss you, man.
No, thank you for taking care of us. Thank you for fanboying for us, really. I don't say that with false modesty, man. It's hugely flattering. I've never done anything like this. I don't even know what we're doing. I'm not talking about the podcast. Yeah. I'm talking about the idea of you guys are asking a different level of question from what it is about what we do. When I sit down to talk to somebody, it's almost always to perform. It's never to talk about the nuances of this thing that we created, people that has influenced people.
Good. Yeah, that's what we want to do. We didn't want to hear your take on LeBron James one more time, leaving Miami.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I remember the first time that I even discovered you was in an ESPN magazine, and I tried to find it before, and you had written something about Warren Sapp and the way in which we react to Warren Sapp, and I'm pretty sure it was like in the early 2000s. And I remember I got done and I was like, how have I never thought about the human that is Warren Sapp before? And I think the thing that you do is...
You're the human that's Warren Sapp. Did you hear that?
Well, Sim says that he knows when I like someone when I say the phrase, I like the way his brain works.
I like the way Levitard's brain works.
And I said that one day and Sims was like, oh, fuck.
Oh, he loves Levitard.
Likes Levitard. But my thing is, I think you're a really good question asker. And the one thing that I've definitely stolen from you is when someone starts to react, I go, no, what was that? That's your move, and I'll credit to you from here on out. But
to stop someone when
you know that they're not giving you the juice, but that little eye flinch, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's because that's for the audience. Because I'm not beholden to the celebrity on the line. I'm beholden to entertaining the audience that's listening to me and that celebrity. So if that celebrity is no good, it's my job and Stu Gatz's job and Mike's job and everybody to make him better. We are always beholden to the audience. Yeah. Denzel Washington comes on our show. You are here to entertain the audience, not to shill your product.
Yeah.
In exchange for entertaining entertaining our audience. You can show your product,
yeah.
but you better come on here and be good, or yeah. or you're going to get called on it. You're not going to be allowed to bore our audience for 8 minutes.
I mean, your shit with Manfred was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner, I mean, you protect your city, you protect your show, and you protect your fans. It's dope.
I don't get that, man. Like, what's so hard? What is so hard about asking? Like, think about what we're talking about.
I know.
That's viewed as some sort of crusading. What is so hard about asking a sports suit a question when you know he's full of shit?
Well, yeah, that's what it is.
Like,
though.
He doesn't get to trample you when he's full of shit just right. because you're going to be polite.
Right. Yeah. But that's our world. I think that's the answer. There's a lot of full of shit in the world right now. I don't even know. That's just my. That would.
But
be
I mean,
my...
I don't. That you guys would think that Manfred thing is something special when a guy comes in to do an interview and does the single worst interview in the history of commissioner interviews. Just loses his cool and lies. And if it wasn't a lie, then it was like you weren't too incompetent to know. It's like that right. casino scene with Robert De Niro and the guy in the slots.
Either you're
like,
in on it, or
yeah, either yeah. you're in on it, or you're too dumb to know the difference. You're out or
yeah,
whatever
yeah.
the thing is
yeah,
like
right.
Get out of here, man. Like that was no tough journalism thing. There was just that was simply I had the truth on something. Somebody was saying something that I knew to not be true by documented by journalism. No, you don't just you're not polite yeah. there.
But
no.
My Yankees are gonna be so good.
Oh, so good. So good. So
we
fun.
We stole yeah. the Marlins' yeah. best yeah. player. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Derek Jeter. Thank you.
He's gonna ravage New York. Yeah. Oh, good God. He's gonna be popular
there. Yeah, we're gonna see him out. Man, keep living your truth. We appreciate you. Thank you, dude.
Thanks for having us. Thanks yeah. for letting
thanks,
us use
yeah,
the space,
for
all
on.
Of it. You the man.
Guys, thank you. That was, honest to God, it was very flattering. I don't
cool.
understand the tug we have on you, but thank you for supporting us that way.
You're the man.
Thanks, dude. Thanks.